parachute and get them both down alive. But at almost the last second, she'd gone limp, too tired to fight anymore, and he'd been able to get them into the proper attitude and pop the chute. "Hey," she said to Boom, catching the look and scowling at him. "At least I stayed conscious this time." Her voice was raw from screaming, not much more audible than if she'd had laryngitis. She looked pretty bad. She had dirt smeared on her face, her clothes were wet and muddy, and her body language screamed dispirited, which was so unlike her. Levi wanted to hold her on his lap and comfort her, the last damn thing she needed. Boom scratched his jaw.
"I'm not sure that's a good thing," he replied.
"I know." Wearily, she sank onto the bench. "I could have killed both of us." The plane started moving, and Levi called out for Air Bud to wait a minute. No questions asked, Bud simply eased back and the plane stopped rolling. Boom sat down on one side of Babe, and Levi took the other side, both of them dwarfing her. She had her head down, and she looked even smaller than usual, as if she was trying to draw into herself. Levi started to take her hand, lace her fingers with his, and caught himself to change the gesture to a backhanded tap on her forearm.
"Babe, you can do this. You know how. Boom's taught you everything you need to know. Just trust him and your training. You know how to steer, you know how to land, and if there are any malfunctions, you know how to handle them."
She gave a tiny nod, her head still down. A big, primal part of him wanted her to say she couldn't do it. Or he could pull the plug himself right now. Likely any of the other team leaders would have as soon as they were on the ground, after the disaster of that last jump. Boom would back him if he did. But she had tackled everything else with so much stubbornness and determination that he knew how she'd feel if she failed at this, knew how devastated she'd be. She deserved another chance.
"All right," he said, making a swift decision. "This next jump, you're wearing the parachute."
Boom looked at him over the top of Babe's head and gave him a brief nod. Her head snapped up and she stared at him with huge, rounded eyes, white showing all around the irises. Her lips were bloodless.
"Boom and I will jump with you," he said. "We'll hold on to you. But you're the one who'll have to deploy the chute and steer it to the LZ.
The way it worked, he and Boom would also have chutes, and they would hold on to her until her chute deployed. Then they'd release her, and once at a safe distance, pull their own cords. He didn't think she was grasping all the details, though, because she looked panicked.
"What if I kill us all?"
she asked, sounding like a terrified frog. He shrugged.
"You'll be dead, too. At least you'll escape prosecution."
Coddling wouldn't do, not now. Let her think she was responsible for all three of them making it down safely. Boom snorted, called to Bud to let it roll. The brakes released, and they started down the runway. Levi and Boom were moving around, getting things ready. Gina concentrated on breathing, inhaling to the count of four, holding for seven, exhaling to eight counts. If she could control her breathing, maybe she could control something else. The results on breathing were mixed. She felt as if she was gasping for air, her lungs functioning in jerks and starts. And she never made it to the holding for seven, much less exhaling for eight. Total panic lurked just beyond the next breath. They were jumping with her. She'd have the parachute. That seemed like a completely stupid situation for them to set up, but she knew they meant business. When it came to their training, the GO teams didn't mess around. It was serious as a heart attack. Levi was forcing her to do this, or else. She had to get her head straight and either quit before they went out that door, or, once they had, function and do her job.
"Take off the tandem harness," Boom instructed. And numbly, she began unhooking and shucking out of it, then getting into the harness with the parachute container.
At least Boom had packed the parachutes himself, so she trusted that it was properly folded and would deploy correctly. If she could just keep her head in the game and remember to pull the freaking cord. She knew how to do this, She just had to keep the panic at bay and remember what she'd been taught. As she geared up, she ran through the parts in her head, picturing them, naming them. The container that held the D-bag, the deployment bag, which actually held the parachute, the risers, the pilot chute, the toggles, the reserve chute, the automatic activation device that would deploy the chute at a certain altitude if she hadn't already done it. Thinking of the AAD gave her a bit of relief. The parachute would open regardless of what she did. Unless she started fighting them, and they were in the wrong position when the parachute deployed, meaning they'd be hopelessly tangled. She couldn't panic. Their lives depended on it. Mentally, she walked herself through each and everything that could go wrong, and how to handle every situation immediately. No hesitation and no trying to fix it. Don't analyze. Act. Boom opened the door. Again. She was beginning to hate that sight. No, there was no beginning to. She hated that open door with every fiber of her being. Freezing cold air was blowing through the cabin, like being caught in a winter storm. She didn't want to be cold. She didn't want that door to be open, and she desperately wanted to be on the ground.
"Let's go," Levi yelled.
Resigned, she pulled her goggles into place, and the three of them shuffled to the door. Boom gave her a thumbs-up sign, and she gave him an are-you-crazy look. Bookended by the two men, Levi on the left and Boom on the right, she crouched with them. Tears blurred her vision, ran hot against her eyelids. "Dear God, please don't let me kill them," she silently prayed. They each took firm hold of her harness and heaved themselves and her out the door. "Damn fools," she thought wildly, including herself in the sentiment. Her vision went black. She still felt the horrendous wind, though strangely it didn't feel as cold once they were out of the plane as it did while they were still in it. It tore at her skin, slapped her. She tried to breathe, tried to do the counting thing, four in and hold for seven, but she couldn't inhale for a four count. She could barely gasp, not much oxygen getting past her constricted throat. At least she wasn't screaming this time, but that was because she couldn't, not because she had any choice about it.
"Open your eyes,"
Levi bellowed, barely heard above the roar of the wind. Dough. So that was why she couldn't see. Squeezing her eyes even tighter, vehemently she shook her head. She didn't want to see. She'd already seen that view twice today, and that was twice too many times. It didn't improve with repetition. Boom tugged on her harness.
"We have you."
Like Levi, he was yelling as loud as he could.
"You have to do this."
Levi again. She had stereo nagging. But he was right. She had to do this. At least her brain hadn't turned off this time. She was at least capable of thinking, even if her teeth were chattering in fear, and her bones felt as if the terror had turned them to water. Her breath was hitching in her throat now. Her lungs were burning in their need for oxygen. How soon before she did pass out from lack of air? Oh, God. She had no idea what their altitude was. Hadn't looked around in the basic security check for other aircraft or any of the obstacles she was supposed to be aware of. She just knew she couldn't pass out, at least not without pulling the pilot chute that deployed the main chute. She had to do that one thing, because Levi and Boom were with her. They were relying on her to get them all out of this hell alive. She had to function. Clumsily, she reached behind her back. Boom had had her do this time after time. She knew where the pilot chute was. She had to pull it free. She pulled it. For an agonizingly long time, that was really only a couple of seconds, nothing happened. Their plummet down was as fast as ever, and her heart sank because it hadn't worked. The parachute hadn't worked. Then there was a whoosh that she felt, a vibration that shivered through her harness, and they were jerked violently upward as if attached to a bungee cord. Somehow she had air in her lungs now, and she screamed because surely, surely Levi and Boom would be jerked away from her. She grabbed for their hands. She felt them lose their grips on her harness. The horror she'd felt during the first two jumps was nothing compared to the awful sense of disaster that overwhelmed her, smashing into her chest like an avalanche. A guttural scream tore out of her throat, long and agonized, and her eyes popped open as she searched frantically for their falling bodies, even though she knew there was no way she could reach them, nothing she could do to stop their headlong plunge to their deaths. Here she was swinging under that damn chute, and they were gone. Levi. Sobs choked her. She tried to scream his name, tried to turn her chute so she could look for them, tried to... The world stopped. Two canopies were floating down near hers, one slightly behind and below her, the other slightly above. Levi. Boom. With their own freaking parachutes. Rage filled her like whiskey, hot and potent. They'd tricked her. They'd made a fool of her. Yeah, they'd gotten her to control her own jump, but she freaking hated them for this whole miserable day, and this was the cherry on top of the whole shitshake. Her arms were shaking violently as she grabbed the toggles, so violently that her parachute began swinging back and forth. Terrified, she turned them loose, then grabbed them again when she remembered she had to hold them. Looking down, she saw her feet swinging, and way, way below them was the patchwork of the earth, thousands of feet down. The shaking got worse, and desperately she switched her gaze to the horizon, the blur where sky met earth. She had to get down. She had to safely navigate all those thousands of feet of nothing but air. She had to steer this stupid parachute. And what moron first thought it was a good idea to jump out of a plane with nothing but a glorified umbrella to float him down like he was Mary fucking Poppins? To somewhere close to the landing zone. And then actually make it down without breaking a leg, her back, her neck, or any other bone. Because she had to be relatively whole and unhurt in order to kill them. Not just for scaring her to death, but likely laughing while they did it. And on top of all that, they'd made her diss Mary Poppins. People went to hell for less than that. Tears kept pouring down her face. She tried to stop crying, tried to wipe her face on her hunched shoulder. But every time she did, the motion started her parachute swinging, and she'd just now gotten the damn thing fairly stable. She could hear both Levi and Boom yelling encouragement and instructions at her. But she didn't acknowledge them in any way, didn't look at them, didn't even scream at them to eat shit and die the way she wanted to. She had several minutes before they were on the ground. Technically, she knew that was how long it took, though the descent had seemed so much longer the first two times, and this one felt even longer. In that short length of time, she had to wipe away any sign of tears, because damn if she'd let them know they'd made her cry, that she'd been so terrified for them. On the other hand, pride would carry her only so far, and in order to wipe her face, she had to release one of the toggles. Not going to happen. Besides, the effort would have been useless. She couldn't stop crying. Through the blur of her tears, she identified the landing zone, jerkily pulled on the toggles to steer herself toward it. The ground was coming up fast, gaining in speed. She started to pull her feet up, then remembered she wasn't tandem with Levi now. She had to land on her own feet. She choked on a sob, flared the parachute the way Boom had taught her, and her feet hit the ground. Her landing had none of the powerful grace of Levi keeping his balance and taking a couple of steps. It was more that she stumbled and went down, hitting knees first, then tumbling flat on her face, before the billowing chute pulled her to the side. She wanted to just lie there and sob, but there were things she had to do. She struggled to her knees and unhooked, scrabbled around to begin hauling in her parachute, which was streaming across the ground like some kind of giant amoeba. It felt as if the fabric was fighting her, trying to catch the wind again and pull free. She wanted to let the damn thing go, but controlling the parachute and pulling it in had been drilled into her by Boom. She hauled on it, scrabbling on her knees, throwing her weight back, digging in her heels. Her movements were clumsy, or the chore wouldn't have been nearly as difficult. She was bad at this, spectacularly bad. Then she had the damn thing under control. She sat on her ass on the ground, pulled a handful of the nylon to her and buried her face in it while sobs choked her and her whole body shook. She knew Levi and Boom were both on the ground, knew they had gathered in their nylon. She heard steps as one, maybe both of them, approached her. She didn't look up.
Babe.
It was Levi. A hard hand grasped her shoulder. She twisted away from his touch, scrambled to the side, and managed to get to her feet, even though she had to put a hand on the ground to brace herself. She felt a rock under her fingers, and before she knew it, she'd whipped her arm around and hurled the rock at him. He jerked his head aside, barely in time to keep from being brained with it. He was too close, and she'd thrown thousands of rocks during her childhood. She saw him scowl, saw him start to bark something at her. Then he saw her face and closed his mouth. Behind her, Boom laughed. Levi held up a warning hand, and Boom cut off the sound like slicing it with a knife. She stood there, crying and angry, clutching a fistful of nylon in one hand, and her other hand knotted into a fist. She wished she had a whole supply of rocks to throw at them. She wished she had a hammer to throw at them. She wished she had her car here so she could just drive off and leave them standing here, because she wanted to do a lot of damage to both of them, and there was no way she could unless they let her, which took all the fun out of it.
"You jerks!"
she gasped in a wobbly voice. She could barely talk, her throat was so raw. Carefully, Levi said,
"You should have known we weren't stupid enough to jump without a parachute."
"I did,"
she shot back, glaring at him through her tears.
"On your orders, so evidently I was stupid enough."
Boom winced.
"Got us there."
Levi was watching her as if she were a rabid squirrel, about to pounce on him. She'd had all she could take today. She was done. Swallowing hard, she turned her back on them and began gathering the parachute up in her arms. Their ride was there, and silently Gina marched toward the pickup. Logistically, she assessed her options. If she got in the back of the King Cab, she'd be riding beside one of them, and she didn't want either of them to be that close. If she got in the front with the driver, they'd both have to get in back. Good enough. That's exactly what she did, climbing into the front passenger seat and slamming the door before they even reached the truck. She held the parachute bundled on her lap and stared straight ahead. She expected to be taken back to that godforsaken Twin Otter. She was ready to blow the damn thing up. Except they probably had a replacement. But when the driver asked, Levi said,
"We're done for today. Take us to the truck."
The relief was overwhelming. During the short ride to the truck, Gina accepted the bitter realization that she had to do something. As much as she felt her dudgeon was justified, that wasn't the way team dynamics worked, especially not a paramilitary team. Likely none of the guys would feel the way she did, or even if they did, they'd bury it under their guy camaraderie reaction, with cussing and some insults, then laughing. She felt up to the cussing and insults, but laughing was beyond her right now. She couldn't be a girl about this. If she wanted to be part of the team, she had to put up with a certain amount of bullshit. Besides, yeah, if she hadn't already been so mentally exhausted, she'd have realized the obvious, that they had chutes. They'd even put them on in front of her. She just hadn't been capable of paying attention right then, and that was on her. That didn't mean they wouldn't pay. They had nothing to say as they got into Boom's truck, which suited her fine. She got in back, positioned herself in the middle, which, if they'd given that a minute's thought, would have alerted them to the possibility of retaliation. But she'd cried and made them uncomfortable, and they were inclined to leave well enough alone. She wished she hadn't cried, but she had, so now she'd use the advantage. She waited, biding her time, looking for the right moment. She wanted some traffic around them, but nothing close behind. Levi took out his phone and started texting. They stopped at a traffic light. Boom lightly drummed his fingers against the steering wheel, looking off to the left. The traffic light changed, and they started forward. Gina made a quick check behind, saw the coast was clear. She drew up her knees, yelled, "Look out!" as loudly as she could, and with all the strength in her legs, kicked their seat backs. Boom slammed on the brakes.
Shit!
Tires squealed and smoked. He and Levi were both thrown forward against their seatbelts, and both braced for impact while wildly looking around for whatever was about to T-bone them. Gina was already braced, her legs against their seatbacks. The truck slid a little sideways, then rocked to a stop. Silence. Slowly, the two big men in the front turned their heads to glare at her. She smiled, buffed her nails against her sweatshirt, and said, "Payback." After dragging her weary butt home, Gina showered, washed her hair, put antibiotic salve on her scrapes, drank some hot tea with honey to soothe her throat, then put on clean sweats and crashed on the couch. She had the energy of a noodle, and she didn't want to think about the day, not even the Levi kissing her part. With the TV on and a light blanket over her, she even napped for a couple of hours and woke feeling hungry. So evidently the emotional trauma hadn't been bad enough to affect her stomach. Holy shit. She'd jumped out of an airplane. 3 times. Okay, so she hadn't jumped so much as she'd been thrown, but still. If she added the altitude 3 times, today she'd fallen more than the distance from the top of Mount Everest to the bottom. That was quite an accomplishment. But she didn't think she'd tell her mom about it. The sun was going down, and she was thinking about ordering in a pizza when her doorbell rang. A quick look through the peephole revealed the guys, or at least 5 of them. Even Voodoo was there, though not Levi or Boom. She opened the door, gave them a puzzled look. "What's up?"
"You made the team," Snake announced, grinning. "We came to take you out and get you drunk."
"What? I did?" Trapper grabbed her, tugged her out of the door.
"Yep. Jumping was the last segment, and you passed it."
"Mostly they threw me out of the plane, and I lived to tell about it. Barely." She tacked on the last word in the spirit of being honest. "Wait, I'm not going out wearing sweats. I need to change clothes." All 5 of them got that look that said they didn't understand. Then Crutch hitched a shoulder and said,
"Girls."
"Undeniably," she countered, and let them in to watch TV while she hurriedly pulled on jeans and sneakers, and a bra. Deciding her sweatshirt was good enough, she grabbed her phone and wallet and keys, and rejoined them within 3 minutes, start to finish. Because she was cautious, getting drunk wasn't likely to happen, but she'd have a drink with them. She'd made the team. She didn't know how that made her feel, other than giddy and scared all at once. The training was over, or at least the preparatory phase was. The guys constantly trained to keep their skills sharp, and she'd be expected to do the same. But now it was all maintenance instead of proving herself. Going down the stairs, she said, "Ace and Boom nearly killed me. I'm not speaking to them."
"Yeah, we know,"
Jelly said cheerfully, giving her his deceptively sweet smile.
"You'll have to get over it. They're waiting for us at the bar."
"All of them?" That sounded ominous. She skidded to a stop, holding on to the railing in case they tried to drag her the rest of the way down. "Wait. If this is any kind of initiation, I'm going back upstairs and locking the door." Snake snorted.
"You're kidding, right? Boom and I had to tell our wives about this. My orders were you can't be hurt, embarrassed, or humiliated. That leaves getting you drunk."
Jelly shook his head.
"Sad but true."
Reassured, she released the railing and went down the rest of the stairs. "I've already been hurt and humiliated today, but I was too scared to worry about being embarrassed. I don't know why anyone goes skydiving for fun."
"Not Voodoo's favorite way to exit a plane either," Trapper said.
Voodoo just looked surly and shrugged. Oddly, that made Gina like Voodoo just a tiny bit more, because not liking skydiving proved he wasn't an idiot. At least in her book. The bar and restaurant they took her to was on the lowbrow side, which made her comfortable with her jeans and sweatshirt. She hadn't expected fine dining anyway. The booths and tables were mostly occupied, and to her surprise she recognized more than a few faces. Several guys from other teams were there. They lifted their beers in her direction. She'd made it. A small table had been pushed up to a big booth that would easily seat 6 people, so there was more than enough room for the 8 members of the team. Sure enough, Levi and Boom were already there, beers in front of them. Levi slid out of the booth, and somehow she was herded in on that side. He slid back in beside her, and she ended up against the wall with no escape. His thigh pressed against hers. The booth was large enough that even with Voodoo taking a seat beside Levi, there was enough room that they didn't need to touch. But there his leg was, and she had nowhere to go. "I don't want to sit next to you," she said. "You tried to kill me."
"You got back at us," he replied, then told the guys what she'd done in the truck. "Scared the shit out of us."
Boom blew out a breath and shook his head.
"My heart's still pounding."
There was a lot of laughter and joking. A waitress came to take their orders, and to her relief there was a lot of food ordered as well as drinks. In short order, a burger and fries were in front of her, as well as a lemon drop martini, which the guys called a sissy drink. But she didn't like beer, so tough. That was her celebration drink, the one she'd gotten when she turned the legal age to drink, as well as when she'd finished college. It was also a strong lemon drop martini. Like any made-the-team celebration, this one involved a lot of toasts, not just from her guys, but from the other team members, too. By the 5th toast, she was feeling the martini, though she tried to be careful with her sips. By the time the drink was gone, she was very happy indeed, so much so that she'd stopped worrying about Levi's leg touching hers. A jukebox was playing, and one of the other team members, she couldn't remember his name, had the balls to approach and ask if she wanted to dance. As happy as she was, Gina started to accept, but then realized something. "I'm trapped," she announced to her would-be partner. "I can't get out."
"They'll let you out."
"No," Levi said. "We won't. There's a reason she's where she is, and that's to keep assholes like you from hassling our girl."
"Oh, come on, Ace, it's just a dance."
"I've seen you dance, you damn octopus. She stays where she is."
"Damn right,"
Trapper added, smiling his calm sniper smile.
"Go dance with your own trainee."
There was some good-natured griping back and forth, but the guy left smiling. They were generally a good bunch of guys, all the teams, she thought. They hadn't been recruited because they were criminals or didn't play well with others. They were recruited because of their abilities and how they functioned within the team framework. Another drink appeared in front of her. Her fries were salty, and the drink was welcome. Somewhere around 8:30, her phone buzzed in her jean pocket. She pulled it out, blinked until the name and number came into focus, and announced,
"It's my mom."
She swiped the phone and happily said, "Hi, Mom." There was a pause, and her mother said,
"Hi, honey. Where are you? There's a lot of noise."
"A bar. I finished training today, and the guys are getting me drunk."
There was a symphony of groans and rolling eyes around her, and she blinked at them in surprise. She lowered the phone a bit.
"What?"
Deftly, Levi snagged the phone away from her, heaved a sigh, and put it to his ear.
"Mrs. Modell, I'm Levi Butcher, but, Gina's boss. She's safe. The whole group is here."
He listened a minute.
"Yes, ma'am. I'll personally guarantee her safety."
"Ha, that's a joke," Gina muttered. "You tried to kill me today."
"Shh,"
came from several big men.
"Don't shush me. I want to talk to my mom,"
she scowled at them. Voodoo popped a fry into his mouth.
"Let this be a lesson," he commented. "She's a lightweight."
She leaned around Levi to shoot him the bird. Levi slapped her hand down and continued talking to her mom.
"Yes, ma'am. No, ma'am. She's had a drink and a half. We fed her first, but you got that right." "Yes, ma'am. I'll have her call you when she's safely home. I'll send you a text right now. Good night, ma'am.
He pulled his own phone out, his face grim, and looked at the contact info on Gina's phone while he thumbed in a text.
What are you doing? She demanded, grabbing for her phone. Give me that. I want to talk to my mom.
She's already hung up. As for what I'm doing...
He shook his head.
I just texted your mother my contact info, because she's holding me personally responsible if anything happens to you.
There was dead silence around the table. Then Snake said,
That's a first.
12. Her mother called her first thing in the morning. Really first thing, meaning 5:30. It wasn't even daylight yet. With the hours of daylight so short now, Gina had barely rolled out of bed and hadn't made it to the kitchen for the first cup of coffee.
Hi, Mom, she said around a yawn.
You're up early.
Thank goodness you sound all right, her mother said grimly. Your daddy and I were prepared to be called to D.C. to identify your body.
Oh, she yawned again. I won't say there was nothing to be worried about, because I guess if I was a mother, I'd have been worried, too.
Even half asleep, Gina was too smart to dismiss her mother's concerns. The woman had eyes in the back of her head, spies everywhere, and a built-in lie detector somewhere in her belly, close to her uterus.
Well,
momentarily taken back, her mother rallied.
That was not a great situation for you to be in.
I had 7 companions, 2 of whom are married, and their wives—
Oh, thank goodness,
her mother said fervently, not letting Gina finish her sentence, which had been that the wives had given their okay.
Because it sounded like all men.
Gina didn't correct the assumption that the wives had been there, because she wasn't that sleepy or that stupid. Thinking back, she remembered seeing a number of women in the bar, so she didn't have to lie.
Not even close.
Anyway, I'm the first one to finish training, so they took me out to celebrate. Kind of. Hamburger and fries, nothing fancy.
And alcohol.
And alcohol. I had 1.5 lemon drop martinis. That earned a chuckle.
Your celebration drink.
I don't even have a headache this morning, so I didn't drink that much, though I was a little happy when you called.
Your boss was reassuring. Thank him for me, for understanding that I was worried.
The funny thing is, when you called, he'd just finished running off some guy who asked me to dance.
Good for him. Tipsy women shouldn't dance. No good can come of it.
I thought that was how you met Daddy.
And I have 5 kids. Point made.
Which ones of us would you give back?
There have been times in the lives of each one of you that I'd have jumped at the chance. I'm just glad last night wasn't one of your nights.
Love you too, Mom. Before I forget, unless there's an emergency, it looks as if I'll be able to come home for Thanksgiving. While I was still in the training program, I was nailed down, but now I can probably wiggle free for a few days.
Hallelujah!
Delight warmed her mother's tone.
It's been too long. If you hadn't been able to come, I was planning on making a trip the next weekend to see you.
Wow. Talk about dodging a bullet. Gina could just imagine marching to Levi's orders and trying to entertain her parents at the same time, because there weren't enough hours in the day.
I'll send you my flight information.
I won't have time to drive down. That would use up half of my time off.
I'll have your favorite cake waiting.
German chocolate. Gina's salivary glands activated.
I've been working out like crazy, just to buy myself some leeway for the holidays. I love it when a plan comes together.
Gina thought about that cake while she was drinking the all-important first cup of coffee and making herself a small protein smoothie, followed by a small bowl of oatmeal for the warm and homey feeling. After yesterday, she needed some comfort food, and there wasn't any meatloaf available. To have that cake, she'd have to run even more miles. Heck, she'd have to run whether she had cake or not, because that was how this gig worked. Stay in shape, or else. Because she had time, she got on the computer and checked flight times. She lucked out and found a single seat on a Wednesday night flight out of Reagan to Atlanta.
Then she checked for an available seat to either Albany or Brunswick, her family home being about equidistant between the two. Then, on second thought, she arranged for a rental car, so she'd have her own wheels while she was there, in case the team got sent out on a mission and she had to leave in the middle of the night. Pride filled her at the realization she'd really done it. She was a member of a GO team now. She not only had an important job where she could make a difference, she'd lasted through some tough training. A couple of the other trainees had gotten hurt, but even more of them had washed out. She hadn't washed out. She was still standing at the end. As an official part of the team, she should do what the guys did and keep a bag packed and in her car so she could leave at a minute's notice. There was a plan. Unfortunately, packing a bag with a couple of changes of clothes and some necessities didn't require a lot of brain power, and she found herself thinking about Levi, whether she wanted to or not. Yesterday had been so traumatic that she hadn't been able to analyze anything. She'd simply tried to live through the day. Last night, she'd been tipsy. This morning, there was nothing to ward him off. He'd kissed her, damn him. Focusing on that helped her not focus on the fact that his hand had been under her shirt, and he'd been between her legs, and that even with their clothes on, he'd made her come. She didn't know how to act, and most of all, she really wanted to avoid him now. After everything he'd said, he was the one who hadn't towed the line. She felt resentful about almost all of yesterday. Last night had been fun. But in retrospect, she was most resentful about that. Kissing her was dirty pool. In the months she'd known him, she had watched how he pulled this string to get that effect, how he shifted and balanced and analyzed in his role as team leader. Given that, she had to consider the possibility that he'd kissed her as an emotional prompt to quit the team, make her think they'd have something, become a couple, if she'd just quit her job. Maybe some women would have done exactly that. Maybe most women would have made that call, depending on the depth of their own emotional involvement. Gina wasn't one of those women. Being physically attracted to Levi wasn't the same as being in love with him, and she didn't confuse the two. He was known for being ruthless in his pursuit of the mission, whatever any particular mission might be. It stood to reason that if he thought she was a weakness that could endanger the team, he'd have booted her out of training. On the other hand, she was the only woman trainee, and there might have been political pressure for him to help her succeed. She didn't think so, because Axel McNamara wasn't exactly known for his political correctness. Rather, the exact opposite. Still, the small possibility existed, and that made her angry. She wanted to succeed because she could do the job, not because someone gave her a pass because of her sex. Damn it, there was no way to sort out all the variables and possibilities, including the one that Levi might, just might, truly be attracted to her. He hadn't been faking the huge erection in his pants, but under those circumstances, in that position, she'd have been more surprised if he hadn't had one. The unwelcome fact was that no matter how she worried the details, or how many possibilities occurred to her, she still ended back at square one, with no options other than to do the job to the best of her ability, and handle the moment she was in. That was all anyone could do, just handle the moment. Her go bag packed, she set it in front of the door so she wouldn't forget it, then checked the time. Just 6:30. She had plenty of time to get to the training site. Being a full-fledged team member didn't change certain things, such as staying in shape. She also needed to log some computer time with Tweety, keep those skills sharp. Now that she'd actually be using them in the field, she could hardly wait. Once she was at the site, Gina got in some running time, which was easier now that the heat of summer was gone. She kept to an easy lope, because she thought she deserved an easy day after the horror that yesterday had been. Besides, she'd sprinted on Friday, in the rain, no less. Donnelly fell in beside her around the 2-mile mark. His shirt was already dark with sweat, telling her he'd hit the course early.
"Hey, we heard some buzz about you last night."
No mind-reading was needed to guess what that was about.
"The jump training? Yeah, it was horrible. I was scared to death, and I never want to do it again."
She was still breathing easily, so talking wasn't a problem.
"But you did it, right?"
"On the third try, and it wasn't pretty."
No points for pretty, he said and slapped her on the shoulder. You did it. You qualified. You're officially on the team. She grinned. The guys took me out last night to celebrate, and my mom called in the middle of it. I told her I'd finished training and the guys were getting me drunk. Levi, Ace, had to explain himself to my mom, and she made him text her his name and phone number. She held him hostage in case anything happened to me. Donnelly laughed so hard he stumbled and had a hard time stopping. Gina pulled up too, walking around with her hands on her hips and breathing deep so she wouldn't get stiff. She had to grin too, because Levi having to deal with a worried, horrified mother had been pretty good stuff. They finished the run together, though Gina thought Donnelly probably ran longer than he'd been planning, but he asked her a lot of questions about jumping. She could tell he wasn't thrilled by the prospect of parachuting either, and he said his training in it was due to start that week, so the experience was rushing at him a lot faster than he wanted. She didn't sugarcoat the experience, nor did she gloss over how horribly everything had gone the first two times. That seemed to reassure him, that she could goof up so bad and still pass. He'd been expecting to get one chance, and that was all. Kodak was extremely well-liked in the Go Team community, but Gina didn't at all approve of how he was handling the trainee situation. For that matter, none of the team leaders other than Levi had taken a hands-on approach to their training. Levi was also the only one who had been saddled with a woman, which was why he'd done it. She had to admit she was likely in much better shape and as far ahead as she was because of his decision. Funny how she hadn't felt honored during any of the ordeal. But it was done, and she was ready to get in the field with Tweety, see what she could do. As the first operator activated with this particular program, a lot of attention would be paid to her results. There were a lot more people at the training site as they neared the end of the course. Neither of them slacked up, because doing so would get some sharp words from Baxter or someone else. Don't let up until the job is done. And she saw a few of her guys, including Levi, standing around talking. Levi turned to look at her, and even from that distance she could feel his gaze boring into her. He hadn't asked her anything about Donnelly, though he'd waited in the parking lot on Saturday night to see if Donnelly stayed late. Was he taking it for granted that her date had been nothing but window dressing? He might be rethinking that, though if he did, she thought she might be insulted, because if she'd truly been dating Donnelly, she wouldn't have kissed Levi the way she had, and she certainly wouldn't have allowed the rest of what had happened. But he didn't know her well enough to get that about her. She actually knew more about him than he did about her, because of the scuttlebutt about him. Any way she looked at it, she was annoyed, angry, embarrassed, and she didn't want to talk to him right now. She said goodbye to Donnelly, and he continued jogging to join the group of trainees, some of whom waved at her. She felt a little sad that she hadn't gone through training with them, the geeks and nerds with whom she was so comfortable. But that water had long since passed under the bridge. She was walking toward her group, swiping her sweaty face on her shirt sleeve, when she saw Kodak himself pull into the parking lot, and on impulse she swerved, heading instead toward him. Kodak was a big, good-looking blonde guy, kind of scruffy in a just-rolled-out-of-bed-after-a-good-time way. He was known to be as cheerful as he was good in the field, and normally being on his team was the best assignment Donnelly could have asked for. Kodak stood in the open door of his truck, reading something, but as she approached, he tossed his reading material onto the seat and closed the door. She probably shouldn't do this. How Kodak ran his team was none of her business. No one had ever told her, don't interfere with another team. But that didn't mean there wasn't an unspoken protocol about how things were handled. If there was, she was about to violate it. Damned if she did, chicken if she didn't. Hey, she greeted him, then stood there feeling awkward. Eloquent and effective. They had never actually met, though she knew who he was. A slow, easy smile lit his face. Babe, he said, making it clear that he knew who she was too. Or maybe he called all women babe. Could I talk to you for a minute?
Darling, you can talk to me as long as you want.
His gaze went over her, and his eyes said he liked what he was seeing.
I know a little hole-in-the-wall cafe that has the best coffee in D.C., Want to go over there and start the morning out right?
She sighed. His reputation as a hound was evidently well-deserved. No flirting. This is serious.
I'm dead serious about flirting. It's one of the most enjoyable things in life.
That easy, charming smile flashed again.
Can I hope you want to leave Ace's team and join mine?
After you've screwed up so bad? No way. The smile left his face and he straightened, his gaze turning direct. When it came to work, Kodak was serious.
What do you mean, I screwed up?
She took a deep breath and plunged in. Might as well get it over with. Ace is the only team leader who involved his team in his assignees' training. I've spent months with the guys, getting to know them, becoming part of the team. Brian Donnelly, the trainee assigned to you, is a good guy. But you haven't made any effort to make him a part of the team before you have to go into the field with him. Kodak took off his cap, slapped it against his leg, replaced it. His blue eyes were steady, narrowed.
You involved with him?
She scowled at him. You don't have to be involved with someone to take up for them. He held his hands up in a surrender gesture.
Just asking, don't take my head off.
He grinned.
I could get used to being fussed at, if you're the one doing it. I heard you give as good as you get. You sure you don't want to transfer to me?
Determinedly, she stayed on message. He's a casual friend. I know him a bit better than I know most of the other trainees, but they're all getting hung out to dry by their assigned teams. She shrugged. Ace wanted to oversee my training because he figured I'd be more of a liability because I'm a woman. I wasn't happy at the time, but in hindsight, that was the best thing he could have done. Time's running out for the rest of you. He rubbed his jaw, nodded.
You have a point.
He caught his eyes to the right, grinned a little.
Looks like you're about to be snatched from my lascivious clutches, he said, winking at her.
Oh, my God, you really said lascivious. She had to laugh. Even when she disagreed with him, he was so damn likable, she thought hanging out with him would be one big party. Too bad she felt none of the visceral reaction to Kodak that she had to Levi, because he would be so much easier to get along with. Maybe there was something wrong with her, that she preferred the man with the scowl, his roughness to Kodak's smoothness.
I know other four-syllable words, too. He replied, grinning. I'm really pretty smart.
All of them were, really. Doing what they did required a certain sophistication of thought and action. All of them spoke at least two languages. They could fly a variety of aircraft and operate computers. Sometimes they made her feel almost backwoods. She was suddenly surrounded by four big men, all the members of her team who had already arrived at the training site, even Voodoo. Though he might have come along just for entertainment.
Stay away from her, Levi said,
the words and tone flat. He meant business, and he didn't mind Kodak knowing it. His chin was tucked, and his hard gaze was level on Kodak, as if he was ready to start brawling. Kodak just grinned.
I'm just standing here by my truck, he pointed out. She came to me. And from my point of view, I'm the one who needs protecting. Evidently, I've been going about things wrong, but I've now been set straight.
Now Levi's hard gaze switched to her. Gina hitched a shoulder. If she had the guts to do it, she figured she had the guts to own it. All the other team leaders should have been training their assignees the way y'all did with me, she said, folding her arms and lifting her chin. That way they're already part of the team when they go out on their first assignment, instead of being strangers. Levi's jaw clenched, and Gina knew exactly what he was thinking, that she'd interfered on her boyfriend's behalf, though she knew she'd never referred to Donnelly as her boyfriend. She switched her gaze back to Kodak.
Anyway, think about it, though there isn't much time to do anything about it.
Nice talking to you. She nodded to him. Slid between Levi and Snake, and walked away. She had to consciously keep from clenching her fists. Boy,
It was a good thing Thanksgiving was coming up, because she desperately needed a break from the guys, even if it was just a couple of days. Sure enough, as soon as the guys rejoined her, Voodoo sniped,
"You likely just made things tougher for your boyfriend."
"Bite me," she shot back. "He's a friend, not a boyfriend."
"He was your date Saturday night."
"So?"
"So he acted like he knows you pretty well."
"Like I said, he's a friend. I had a life before I was hijacked into training." She gave him a smile that showed more teeth than necessary. "Not that you'd know anything about having friends."
"Can it?"
Levi ordered, looking fed up with the exchange. He glared at both of them. Whatever else he might have said was cut off when his phone signaled an incoming text. Almost simultaneously, four other phones began buzzing, including hers. She pulled it out of her pocket, read the text, then reread it. Her mouth fell open.
"Really? Really?"
3 days before Thanksgiving, 2.5 days before her flight, they were being ordered to Paris. Not even Paris, Tennessee. France. Paris, France. She groaned. "I was going home. I booked my flight this morning." Snake looked unhappy too. Levi shrugged.
"Can't be helped. Someone's holiday is messed up no matter which team gets the call. With any luck, we'll be home in a couple of days, but we won't know until the briefing. Come on, let's move."
At least she wasn't caught completely flat-footed, Gina thought morosely as she went to her car. She had her go-bag with her. Normally, she'd be excited about her first mission, and normally, she'd like to go to France. But not when it meant missing Thanksgiving and her mother's German chocolate cake. Damn it all. Sometimes life just wasn't fair. 13. 18 hours later, Gina and Crutch sat in a not-very-good hotel room in Paris, while the other 6 team members were conducting surveillance on their target. Crutch was keeping in contact with them and coordinating. Gina wasn't doing anything other than waiting. She hadn't expected to be bored, but she was. Somehow she'd thought the teams did exciting stuff all the time, which, if she'd taken the time to think, she'd have known wasn't possible. But innocent expectations were what they were. And in this case, they were wrong.
"A lot of the stuff we do is boring,"
Crutch said easily when she mumbled a complaint.
"Probably about 70% is gathering information. With you and Tweety here, maybe we can cut down on the time spent following people around and getting jack shit for our efforts. Sometimes we're just building a file, looking for patterns, things like that. It's not immediately important, but down the road, all of it is."
That was one way of looking at it. Too bad the present was still just as boring. This was an object lesson. Always have reading material with her. This was, in fact, the second object lesson she'd learned on her maiden mission. The first was that she'd packed as if they were going into the field, when most of what they did was in urban settings. Her cargo pants and boots would only get her so far. What she really needed was jeans, a pair of flats, and a warm but stylish sweater, because this was Paris. She'd developed a huge inferiority complex just driving in from the airfield and seeing the French women on the sidewalks. Not only was she now bored, she was fighting a powerful urge to go shopping, have her hair done, and get a manicure, after she visited a pastry shop. But she was stuck here, with no downtime until Levi said so. The subject of their surveillance was a South African banker named Graham Berger, who had triggered some flags at the National Security Agency because he'd contacted a Sudanese who had terrorist links. The Sudanese was currently in Paris, and now so was Banker Berger, whose plane had touched down at De Gaulle a couple of hours ago, and whose taxi was now being followed by Levi and the other guys using a tag-team method. They had 3 cars, 2 men to each car, and so far so good. There was no indication that they'd been burned, and the taxi driver wasn't making any effort to evade them. Maybe Berger being in Paris at the same time as the Sudanese was a coincidence. And maybe the sun would turn blue. In the dark underworld of terrorism, there were no coincidences.
Despite the NSA's all-encompassing record gathering, so far the reason for the connection between Berger and Nawal Daw was murky. South Africa wasn't a terrorist hotspot. And although the Foreign Service Institute scored the SA banking industry as a possible safe haven for tax evaders, again, it wasn't a hotspot. Sudan, however, was a terrorist cesspool, and Nawal Daw was involved up to his skinny neck, with ties to Hezbollah, ISIS, and several domestic Sudanese groups. Why a country needed more than one terrorist organization, Gina couldn't fathom. But from the briefing they'd received, Sudan had quite a collection. Nawal Daw wasn't one of the leaders, but he had connections to the leaders. Of particular interest was that Graham Berger had applied for a visa to travel to the States for vacation. The visa had been approved, and a watch on Mr. Berger had been put in place, so whatever plans he made could be monitored. If a terrorist group in Sudan wanted to use Mr. Berger in an attack on the States, the GO teams had been put in action to find out exactly what was being planned. And she would miss out on her mom's German chocolate cake. And mom would be mad at her for missing Thanksgiving. Gina sighed. She couldn't even play games on the heavy-duty, field-tested, encrypted, top-secret laptop with which she controlled Tweety, because the government evidently didn't want her playing games on their equipment, which was really crappy of them, because playing games on their equipment was what had gotten her this assignment in the first place. On the other hand, playing more games might end up getting her launched into space, so she supposed she should leave well enough alone. Why can't I help with following the Goonie, since I can't do anything else? Crutch said,
You aren't qualified.
I have eyes, and I can drive.
You might be needed here at any time. And trust me, you can't drive in Paris. It's a nightmare. You don't speak French, you don't know anything about the streets, you'd get lost. And you'd likely cause an accident that would get you killed.
He grinned at her.
We're looking out for you.
And boring her to death at the same time. Does everyone speak French except for me?
Some, at any rate. Voodoo's fluent. Ace and Trapper are not quite as good. The others get by, but the French sneer at them. You should take some language courses.
In my spare time. But that was an idea. She'd see which languages were most useful now, and at least get some rudimentary language skills going. Overseas flights were long, and that would be something to pass the time because sleep was hard to come by. She'd been too excited, quarters had been cramped, and she hadn't acquired the guy's ability to nap on a moment's notice, whether they were lying, sitting, or propped against a wall. Not only that, Jelly and Crutch were such practical jokers, she didn't think she'd ever feel comfortable sleeping in their presence. Her work cell phone buzzed. She jumped, and her heart rate picked up. Part of the protocol was that anything relating to the drone would be sent by text, instead of a phone call that might be picked up by an audio recording bug. The text was from Levi. Get Tweety ready. Adrenaline shot through her system, making her feel almost dizzy. She jumped to her feet and got Tweety ready to fly. Guidance systems for drones originally required line-of-sight communication with the controller, but they were so far beyond that now, she could operate him from just about anywhere. The military's Predator drones could be controlled by people sitting in front of a screen thousands of miles away. But that much distance had the built-in lag time that McNamara had wanted eliminated, so Tweety didn't need that kind of capability. Paris was a big city, with innumerable obstacles. But with Tweety's 360-degree cameras, sensors, and pinpoint GPS, she could zip him around the city as easily as if he were a real bird. The next text was the coordinates where Levi wanted the drone to be positioned. Swiftly, Gina pulled up the coordinates on the computer and surveyed the area, while the computer plotted the best path. Paris was an old, overcrowded, jumbled city, with almost no straightforward route to anywhere. There were so many variables that had to be considered. Wind, pedestrians, buildings, street lamps. Tweety had been designed to attract minimum attention. He was silent and had awesome battery power. But keeping him unnoticed with so many people around was a priority. The last thing they wanted was to have an incident that resulted in the drone being knocked from the sky and captured. That wouldn't be as bad as the software in the laptop falling into the wrong hands. but still. She texted Levi that Tweety was on the way, and suited actions to words. It was a rush, watching on her computer screen, seeing what Tweety saw, deftly guiding him over or around obstacles, sending him flying to Levi's location,